From the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, I'm Barbara Caritti, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, September 14th, 2016. And on this day, Maine Medical Center proposes a $500 million renovation and expansion plan that would add more private rooms to the Portland Hospital. Three recent polls show a tight presidential race in Maine, giving rise to speculation that the state's electoral votes could be split for the first time in decades. And improving internet access in Downeast Maine by checking it out of the library. Those stories and more after this. This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and Kennebec Valley Community College, offering a late start semester beginning September 26th, kvcc.me.edu. I'm Barbara Caritti. Maine Medical Center announced today that it's planning a $512 million renovation and expansion. The project would modernize the facility and add more single-patient rooms. As Patty White reports, hospital officials say private rooms are becoming the standard for care of patients with increasingly complex health issues.
When Dr. Joel Botler first started practicing at Maine Medical Center 37 years ago, the patients who came through the hospital's doors typically had just a single health problem that needed to be treated.
Those days are really over.
These days, says Botler, who's now the chief medical officer at Maine Med, the patients he sees are much more complex.
I'll be in the emergency room and admit a patient who's got 8 or 9 problems and 20 different medications.
Treating these patients in a room they share with another patient, he says, is often not possible.
You know, the conversations that we have now, they're different than they were many years ago. I mean, telling a person about their cancer diagnosis or end-of-life discussions or HIV discussions or hepatitis C, you can go on and on.
To provide proper privacy and care, Maine Medical Center has to shut down beds in double occupancy rooms on a daily basis. The situation creates bottlenecks, with patients from the emergency department or being transferred from other hospitals waiting for available rooms. Even though Maine Med is licensed for 637 beds, President and CEO Richard Peterson says the hospital's true capacity is well below that.
It's not unusual for us to have 50 less beds on any given day.
The proposed renovation and expansion would add 128 single-patient rooms and convert many of the existing double rooms into singles. The total number of beds would hold steady at 637. Peterson says staffing levels will also hold steady, at least initially.
If our volume grows, which we believe it will, then you would see some additional staffing being deployed.
Along with more single-patient rooms, the renovation and expansion would modernize 20 procedure rooms. It would replace an existing parking garage. It would also shift the hospital's main entrance from Portland's West End neighborhood to Congress Street, a major thoroughfare. But with a price tag of $500 million, what will this project mean for the price of care?
We believe that the numbers will be relatively small. A number of about 1% was used.
About a 1% increase in hospital charges. Peterson says even if that estimate is low, he doesn't anticipate any cost spikes because half the money for the project will come from fundraising and the hospital's own reserves. The other half will come through a loan.
We think by not doing this and not being able to care for patients in the environment that we need to, in the long run, will be more expensive for us.
Several studies have found that single-occupancy hospital rooms improve patient outcomes by reducing infection rates. If Maine Medical Center successfully obtains permitting and regulatory approval, the renovation and expansion is expected to be completed within 5 years. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Meanwhile, members of the Augusta Planning Board yesterday put the brakes on the LePage administration's plan to build a new unit to house a group of forensic patients currently at the Riverview Psychiatric Center. Mal Leary has more.
The only formal opposition to the proposal to build the 21-bed facility adjacent to Riverview was NAMI Maine, a group that advocates for those with mental illness. They say they can't figure out what the new facility is, a hospital or a prison, but it sounds like a prison. Members of the planning board were just as confused as to what the facility will be. They want to know if it will be licensed as a hospital, which is a permitted use in that area, or whether it will be licensed as a correctional facility, which would need a waiver. They also wondered if it may be a new kind of group home with yet a different set of requirements. They voted unanimously to table the application until their October 11th meeting, when they've asked their staff to request the state to provide someone to answer those questions. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
The LePage administration, meanwhile, is proposing some rule changes for welfare recipients seeking jobs as it finalizes a $26.5 million contract with a New York nonprofit to run Maine's Welfare to Work program. Proposed new rules would forbid job training participants from rejecting job offers unless they pay less than minimum wage. Participants would also get more help for car repairs and books and supplies. The public has until the end of September to comment on the proposed rules. About 3,500 Maine parents who receive temporary assistance for needy families benefits are required to search for jobs. Coming up, some recent polls indicate a tight race in Maine between Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump. Three recent polls show Republican presidential hopeful Donald Trump in a tight race with Democrat Hillary Clinton in Maine. The surveys have generated some national buzz because a Republican presidential candidate hasn't won here in 30 years, and Maine has never split its four electoral votes. As Steve Missler reports, the polls may highlight an issue that Trump is hoping to exploit.
The results of the three polls are wildly inconsistent. In one, Trump has a commanding lead over Clinton in the 2nd Congressional District. In another, the two candidates are in a dead heat in that rural, more conservative portion of the state. Clinton leads statewide in all three, but in one survey by Colby College and the Boston Globe, Trump trails by just 3 points, and he's within the margin of error. Political commentators are quibbling over each poll's methodology and accuracy. But everyone appears to agree on one key thing. Maine, typically and reliably blue in presidential elections, is shaping up to be a battleground state this year.
I think anyone who believes that Hillary Clinton will win this in a walk, it probably fundamentally misunderstands just how restive the electorate is.
Michael Cuzzi is a senior vice president for Vox Global. He's worked for a number of Democratic campaigns, including former Congressman Tom Allen. Cuzzi says Trump's strong showing in Maine was foreshadowed by Republican Governor Paul LePage. Both are unconventional politicians. Both have made mistakes that would typically hobble other candidates or elected officials, but neither has paid an electoral price for their unorthodox style. Local and national media have repeatedly attempted to diagnose the phenomenon. They've settled on theories about rural white voters' economic anxiety and their concerns about changing demographics. The demographic change led the U.S. Census Bureau to forecast 8 years ago that racial minority groups will make up a majority of the U.S. population by 2042. Cuzzi agrees with those theories, but he believes the analysis often leaves out a key issue.
The Democratic Party has really forgotten how to talk to white working class voters.
And he's not alone in this assessment. In July, Vice President Joe Biden told MSNBC host Joe Scarborough that Democrats have done the right thing for those voters, but they're just not talking to them. Biden also described his instructions to his staff on how he wanted them to interact with constituents when he was a U.S. senator.
In the very beginning, make sure they know that I know what they're concerned about, that I know what their problem is. Whether I agree with them or not, the solution. Let them know I know what's worrying them and why it's not illegitimate, their worry.
Cuzzi says Democrats have correctly focused on new constituencies, especially minorities. It's allowed them to court new voters and dominate urban, more affluent regions of the country. But he says the strategy has come at the expense of what was Democrats' core constituency and a major constituency in solid blue Maine.
If you are going after a population that is more diverse, is more urban, is more highly educated, you are by definition leaving out the vast majority of the voters here in Maine.
Cuzzi believes Trump and LePage are filling what he described as the messaging hole. That may help explain why Trump has visited the state 3 times and why LePage has been reelected despite numerous controversies. And that, along with the recent polls, may also explain why Clinton's running mate, Tim Kaine, is making an unexpected visit to the state on Thursday. It's Kaine's first trip to Maine as a vice presidential hopeful. Clinton has not been to the state since holding a small rally here nearly a year ago. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Meanwhile, down in Washington, Maine Senator Angus King has introduced legislation aimed at reducing a massive backlog of veterans' appeals for benefits. The backlog pending before the Veterans Administration currently numbers 450,000, and it's growing. At a Washington news conference, King said some veterans have had to wait as long as 4 years for their appeals to be resolved. Right now, he said, there's only one way for veterans to appeal their cases, and a simple mistake can bump the entire process all the way back to square one.
Those kinds of things are just unacceptable, and we have it in our power this week or next week or certainly before the end of the year to fix this, and I certainly hope we will.
King, an independent, said the appeals process dates back decades and needs to be streamlined, with more options and less red tape. His legislation would create 3 additional ways for a veteran to appeal. The measure has bipartisan support in both the House and Senate. King's Republican colleague, Susan Collins, meanwhile, is focusing on concerns about retirees. Collins chairs the Senate Aging Committee, which has released a study on how seniors can maximize their Social Security benefits. Collins says many are facing a retirement crisis.
Far too many Americans have not saved enough money to live comfortably in retirement. Many of these retirees will rely on Social Security for nearly all of their income.
Collins said that by putting off the start of benefits, seniors can significantly increase their monthly benefit. The study indicates that delaying the start of benefits until age 70, for example, could add about $1,000 a month to a person's benefit check. In much of Maine, it's tough to find quality high-speed internet. According to one estimate, Maine ranks 49th out of 50 states when it comes to broadband availability. The problem is magnified when you head down east to rural coastal towns like Cherryfield and Isle of Haut. Robbie Feinberg reports on efforts to improve that internet access by checking it out of the library.
The small fishing village of Jonesport is more than an hour and a half east of Bar Harbor. And if you go at night past the corner store and the church, you might see a strange sight. Lots of cars with people inside just parked outside the library.
Oh my goodness. It still happens today. I mean, you ride by at night and there's 4 or 5 cars out.
Librarian Heidi Hinckley says these are kids doing homework using the library's Wi-Fi because there's no access at home.
I mean, it was just boom. It was like, where did all these people come from?
As education has moved from books to web pages, the internet has become a necessity for students. But in rural parts of Maine, high-speed internet simply isn't available at home.
This is one right here. I had returned and charging up.
Hinckley shows me one solution being tried in Washington County. Mobile Wi-Fi devices that can be checked out of the library, just like a book. About 10,000 of the devices have been distributed across New York City. But the New York Public Library wanted to see the effect they would have in a rural area. So in 2015, the library partnered with the Maine State Library on a 2-year project to purchase about 80 devices for libraries from Cherryfield to Lubeck. Jared Ledbetter, the technology consultant for the Maine State Library, says that access is critical for educators.
When you're dealing with hundreds of students, you really need something where you can connect with the high-definition world. And anything less is going to deprive these students of tools that they'll need going forward.
So has the experiment worked? In Jonesport, librarian Heidi Hinckley says as soon as the school year started last September, every single device was off the library shelf, with a waiting list of up to a dozen more families. It gets particularly bad in winter, she says, when low-income families deal with new expenses, like heating oil.
A lot of the people will just, you know, I've got to make the choice here. I've got to buy heating oil, you know, I've got to buy wood for the wood stove, or I've got to pay, you know. The bills always take the priority, and the internet is usually the first thing to go.
That need isn't just in Washington County. Devices have also been deployed in Aroostook County and even in Portland. But there have been some challenges.
Just basic coverage turns out to be a problem.
University of Texas Communications Professor Sharon Strover studies these Wi-Fi checkout projects. She even sent a team to Washington County this summer to look at Maine's program. Strover says some libraries have had success, but in some towns with limited cellular coverage, the devices couldn't connect to the internet at all.
In some locations, they worked initially and then stopped working. In other locations, they worked for a while and tapered off, and they may still be able to be operated, but the librarians don't seem to know how to get them going again.
And even when the devices do work, they have limited data available, only 2 gigabytes a month. That's enough to browse some web pages. But if you want to watch a video or a tutorial, that can quickly use up all of your bandwidth for the month. That can leave students stuck right back where they started, without any home internet access for weeks at a time. Nevertheless, Janet McKenney with the Maine State Library says she wants to see every rural library with 2 or 3 devices designed for low-income families. But funding runs out in January, and McKenney says that leaves local libraries with a tough decision. Can they afford to keep offering the devices?
And as we talk about libraries lending things other than books, this is the new era of lending. We're lending the internet.
There are other efforts underway to increase rural internet access. Brianna Warner is the economic director for the Island Institute, which is working to help island communities with similar problems. Warner points to the island of Islesboro, which is planning a $3 million project to get gigabit speed connection. She says every town doesn't need to go that far, but she thinks it's important for both educating students and making them want to come back after college.
Once they go to college, they have high-speed internet speeds, they have a lot of career opportunities, and then they look at the island where they would like to go back to, and their career opportunities are really limited.
Even with big hurdles ahead, Warner is optimistic that 10 years down the line, internet speeds on these islands and coastal towns could catch up, and maybe even surpass some cities on the mainland. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
Meanwhile, every fourth grader in Maine will have a chance to learn more about endangered and threatened species. The Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife has sent its latest full-color endangered and threatened species poster and an associated wildlife lesson packet to every fourth grade teacher and every public library in the state. The effort is funded with a grant from the Maine Outdoor Heritage Fund. IFNW Education Coordinator Lisa Kane says the poster by Maine wildlife biologist, artist, and writer Mark McCullough depicts the 51 species that are endangered or threatened in Maine.
All arranged in the shape of the state. And the wildlife is actually placed in the regions of the state in which it's most likely to be found.
Kane says the lesson packet contains 3 wildlife activities that support use of the poster. And finally, here's meteorologist Paul Cousins with the forecast.
A distinct cold front is now plunging into the Gulf of Maine. Scattered showers and isolated thunder will exit most of the state shortly. The mountains and far north, a few isolated showers will linger into the evening. Skies will become moonlit later tonight. Winds easing, 40s for most, low 50s along the south coast. Tomorrow, a fleeting flirt with fall. It will be crisp statewide. Partly cloudy over northern and western Maine with a bit of a breeze. Full sunshine for the rest of the state. 60 to 70 north to south. Temperatures will moderate Friday with copious sunshine. Upper 60s to mid 70s, coolest far north and the immediate shore. Saturday will be the guaranteed dry weekend day. Over northern and western Maine, morning sun will quickly yield to thickening clouds. Bright sunshine throughout the rest of the state will fade during the afternoon. Brightest east of Rockland and Bangor, 70s to near 80, warmest interior southwest. A stalled front will complicate Sunday. There will be a few showers about, and it will be considerably cloudy with building humidity, but the day will not be a lost cause. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public Broadcasting.
And that's the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, September 14th, 2016. Our theme music was composed by Robert Holt. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, and Andrew Catalina, and to Patty White, Steve Missler, Robbie Feinberg, Mal Leary, Ed Morin, and Nora Flaherty for their contributions. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the podcast. You can rate and comment in iTunes, or you can email us at tdim@mpbn.net. I'm Barbara Caridi. For all of us here at Maine Public Broadcasting, thanks for listening.